PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of Off Course. As we near episode 100, I am super excited to bring back our good friend Jason Horodesky from Kinetics. Great to have you, Jason. I know every time you come on the show, people learn something. I act like I know a lot, but in truth, I learn everything as well. Really glad to have you today.
Well, thanks, Dan. I'm always delighted to be here. And remember, Benjamin Franklin said, education is what remains when you've forgotten all your schooling. So we're all learning, bottom line.
Well, you've already drilled me to the wall here, so that's perfect. How are things over at Kinetics? Are you guys absolutely crushing it right now?
We're doing well, thank God, and there's plenty of blue sky above us too. So we're excited with our position and strategy, and now we're very eager to really step it up in 22 for sure. We've seen a thirst and demand for our products increasing through our dealer partners and our direct-to-consumer business as well. And as long as golfers get it in their hands, that's the most important thing. So we're happy.
So you've got a little bit of a different backdrop. We've always done these in video, even though audio has been the particular focus of the output to our listeners. You got a bit of a different backdrop this time. I think you know that I'm stuck in the snow in Ohio, so you chose to showcase what looks like a putting green, a place to hit balls. I think I see a mini hockey rink in the back. Are you doing that to mess with me, or are you just showcasing that Kinetics does have a lot of fun over there?
We have a lot of fun, and yeah. We would never do anything to tease and go on anybody who's on the other side of the glass. But yeah, no, we're a pretty unique company, and quite honestly, we're probably a little bit too clandestine, and we're trying to show the world who we are. This is the beginning of it all. So yeah,
you have behind you on the over your left shoulder something. It looks like some kind of robot, as Josh would say, robot, and I'm super curious as to what it is and why it's where it is.
Yeah, it's critical. So this is in any finished product, it begins first in a computer, and then in the lab phase of fabrication, and then ultimately you put it to test, you put it to practice, and so we have what is as a shaft company, what a full club company would have in terms of capacity and capabilities for internal R&D. And we rely heavily on our robot systems and everything that goes with the element of testing, putting something to practice and perfecting it before it is a finished product. So robots critical. We use a few of them actually, and this is our highest order performance. We use a machine that has hand, wrist, and arm. It's critical when you're profiling shafts. It's critical to proof of performance and proof of concept. And so we'll go through probably about 4,000 dozen golf balls in a year, maybe five, and a lot of our equity, sweat equity in performance testing. We'll do high speed video analysis from 50,000 frames a second down into, whatever sample lot we want to look at. That gets very tiresome. Actually, it sounds neat, but when you're studying one impact, that's a lot of time to actually reduce that into that field of view. And then we do everything everything that's in the golfer's hands today has gone through our rigorous testing processes, which is from either durability and actual material performance to final finished product performance. So we quantify everything, and it's on the highest order. And we're proud of that.
So you mentioned hand, wrist, and arm, and I'm not going to say talk to me like I'm 10, because I don't really need to say that. I think most people don't really get a full understanding of what you're saying. I personally don't. I'm familiar that many companies in this space have robots that they use to test their equipment on. We've seen it at multiple. I've been out to a number of different manufacturers of club heads that actually do it. How does that apply to a shaft company? And is the concept of hand, wrist, and arm different from some other type of robot there might be out there?
Yeah, of course. So the bulk of and testing to the point of probably, I would say, shaft testing that I know of, was done with devices that didn't incorporate wrist, at least. And so these were casting devices. They bent at the elbow, if you will. And if you're profiling a golfer or profiling a shaft for a golfer, you need to incorporate the hand and wrist. It's very important. And at the end of the day, if you're testing and mapping club performance, you don't need the same capability and the freedom, although most all OEMs have it. So from that perspective, we would be on par with a brand, a club brand, versus just a shaft company. And very few shaft companies actually incorporate the robot in their testing mode, not organically. It's not a cheap system. It doesn't, it's not something you take out of a box and plug and play. It takes a skilled and built learning curve to operate, function, and perform efficiently with it. So, but the freedom is the difference. So it's your clamp condition and your freedom and what you're testing. If you're isolating a club head, then it's very easy to take a device that's a casting device and just sort of bends at the elbow, but the wrist stays solid. But if you're profiling a shaft, you know, what if you're a guy like early cock and then hold on to it, a lot of lag and then late release. And you could have be two different players of the same speed and those two different swings. So someone who's late to actually cock the wrist to load and or someone who's quick have the identical speed, but shaft profile will be entirely different on the basis of that. If you can't program that in this device, then your predictability in the field when you're actually testing amongst players is, you know, your margin of uncertainty is so wide that it could take you a long time to get to where you need to go. Too many iterative cycles of prototyping, and you still may not end up there. And you have nothing to corroborate your data with. It's just feel. And feel is different for you as it would be for me. So, you can look at flight and you can look at ball numbers, but with a data acquisition system, which we use them all, and still have to sometimes resolve what's going on with a camera, high-speed video camera, something that would be, we have a system that uses, it's a six-figure camera that it uses, it would actually test highest order ballistics, watching a bullet go through a phone book, if you will, each page at a time. And now you don't always have to go that detailed with golf, but it's important to know what you're dealing with. And from the empirical side to putting something to practice to finally having something on the tee for the golfer to use. So you want to emulate the golfer. You want to profile their swings and then understand what that's doing to your whole club assembly, particularly to the shaft.
So do you have the ability to add like number of alcoholic drinks had before?
Power actually we could if you want to that would I would try I would actually convey that to characterize that as power for sure, because okay. Inebriated individuals do they're very pliable at that point. That's actually a guy who might hit his 120 club speed and some really amazing personal bests with ball speed because he's so loose, but that's also why some golfers play well that way.
That is really interesting. And this is a beef, if you will, that I've had with the online profiles that are given to shafts. I really struggle with them because of my experiences in the past. And I, what I mean by that is if you take me, who maybe doesn't have a traditional swing, and you take four other guys of totally different swing mechanics, and you put the same shaft into each of our hands, even if we swing at the same swing speed, we're generating a different experience out of the shaft. I mean, I could count the number of things, say this is a low launching, low spinning, but in reality for me, it's very much not. Does this kind of device empower you to create a more dynamic online profile for those people who are absolutely lost in their pursuit of the perfect shaft?
So paper specs are misleading, period, just to the layperson, to even to someone skilled in the art. And so that's, you have to take that with a grain of salt. You have to really understand the method of manufacture and the true substrates and materials that are being used, first and foremost. And then secondly, as a producer, you want to produce a product range that does have some bend to it, at least. So one product can have some crossover with the other, and you can produce an array that isn't so different that you're polarizing yourself in each category of product you produce. So I think really what that boils down to is the dynamic aspect of your design. And then it actually gets to construction. Can you, we can all have great designs and some very neat, unique design intentions, but can we put it to practice? Does it have the fatigue life cycle if we do? And what are the determinants to put that to practice? Maybe you have to use a material that's so expensive that cost is a determinant, and it's prohibitive, cost prohibitive. So I think it plays into the, there is a gestalt there. It's a whole theory in a sense. It is connected, but you do want to appeal to you, but also your counterpart, who may not be like you, but on paper, they might be like you, right? So they might have the same numbers and outputs, and but you guys get there two different places. So you have to take that into account when you're designing right from the get-go. And you have to prove it out from an efficiency standpoint in an environment that's truly unbiased. And you know, we're scrutinizing our own products. And that's the key. It's not to actually market, although we should. It's to scrutinize our own products and those that we make for others, and particularly our own. So it's very important, and in every cat, within all the constraints of design.
Well, I love that we went on a 10-minute tangent. I did have an intent for this episode, of sort of a mailbag from our listeners who have questions about shafts they don't typically get answers to.
Sure.
I kind of stole half the time, or a quarter of the time, asking about a machine in the background, but I think it actually ties in a lot. And when it comes to some of these questions, one of the ones that really stands out based on what you're speaking of right now about these online profiles, they want to know, is high launch and low spin a real thing? We see it everywhere. It's online. Every shaft ever made is high launch, low spin, unless it's mid. Can that actually be achieved? Do you not need spin to create launch?
So, yes and no. The shaft's role is to present the club head. And anybody who's really laying claim to the shaft being the sole contributor in that dynamic, really, they need to step back and go, okay, you got to put your marketing and business hat aside from your technical prowess and intellectual apparatus, I think. So yes and no. A harmonized piece of equipment, a global assembly, club head and shaft combined, they're independent bodies. They are independent of each other, even in their full assembly, until they're made in one full manufacturing process, which there was a company years ago who did that. In prototype mode, they were great. In serialized production, they failed miserably. And then so you have to look at it from the perspective of the global assembly. And there is a shaft profile that is for you or for me or for our golfing audience and the THP constituents and community alike. And everyone has their individual shaft profile, but it is independent of the club head, just like the assembly is independent. So you should be able to take that. Once you found a profile, you should be able to apply that profile to every different club head. Now back to the launch and spin. There is such a thing as, a high launch, low spin within that's an ambiguous term, because what are you defining as high launch and what are you defining as low spin? So there is a set number there, and there's a vector for each individual and what's ideal on the basis of getting the maximal output for that person, downrange performance result. right? And so the beautiful thing about adjustable club heads today is that they can allow the golfer to be tailored to. So it's like if you're going to play a Steinway piano, you have to actually play that instrument. You have to accommodate to that. But in an adjustable system, and it's within realm because you can tune a piano, and I'm only using this on the basis of golf clubs and instrument. So the unique thing here is you can tune your instrument to you. So you look at some of the players on tour to create that high launch, low spin. They're altering their and adjusting their either the inertia effect in the club. Generally speaking, the loft is something that they will look at as well, and lie angle. And but very few will just jump around from shaft to shaft to shaft because they found a profile typically that works for them. So then that will produce that downrange end result of high launch, low spin, or whatever it is they're looking for. So high is a relative term and low is a relative term. So, you know, you have to look at the velocities of the players, how fast they are, what is optimal for that player. If you're looking at an elite long drive athlete, there's a fairly common launch and spin number there, but not for everybody, you know, because they're still playing a grid. You look at a tour player, they'll look at it on the perspective of, again, optimizing their outputs. So there is and there isn't. I'm sorry, it's such a ambiguous answer, but it isn't just that cut and dry. And there should be no shaft company that can simply take claim for high launch, low spin, because it's a global assembly. And some shafts are designed to present the club head differently than others, in which case that'll preordain that impact for a higher launch or a lower spin. It doesn't mean that that's the sole contributing factor.
So not to fan the flames or throw mud or whatever you want to call it, but there is a basic understanding that I'm getting here that the shaft profile by design could be very different between individuals based on the way they present to the ball on contact. Is that pretty fair?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
So in that case, are we getting a bit of a disservice by being told what it should do, assuming that we are not all created equal?
Absolutely. Yeah, you can't put it in the box like that. There's a design intention, and there's boundaries for that design intention. But at the same time, you just can't put a circle around it that way. So, you know, if you just can't, it's at times a square peg round hole situation. In this case, it doesn't fit the way it should. And you have to take into consideration, again, back to the fundamentals of the product, how it's made, how it's designed, how it's made, and the materials that are being used. So that's a confluence in its own right. So
I want to circle back because there's another question that revolves more around the way you design shafts at mm-hmm. Kinetics. And the question is, does the ever-changing clubhead technology alter the direction of shaft design for you? Now, obviously, we're looking 10, 20, whatever years it is, mm-hmm. where heads used to spin a lot. Now they kind of don't, especially from mm-hmm. the driver perspective. Maybe that hollow body distance iron, a little bit less spin there, but launches differently. So the question is, year over year, do you have to change your philosophies at all, or do you take into consideration what the more consistent profile is in that area before moving on to your next design?
Well, we're all looking at our own in our own lanes, what we think would be our ultimate, you know, perfect product. And with that in mind, I think, again, you have limitations on your construction and there might be determinants in your manufacturing cycle. But the reality is such that, I really think that the best way to put it, there's a limit line, you know, so you're going to take a pill versus the bottle each interval cycle. And yes, today's club heads are changing all the time. Shafts haven't changed as much, but they have quite, you know, demonstrably. And the relationship of the impact mechanic has changed. So that will parlay into your question. In the old days, heads spun a lot more because there was less, they were less compliant. And we're dealing with very lossy golf balls, liquid core golf balls for the most part, you know. And so that relationship sort of inverted. And there's been arguments out there, people talking about the golf ball being too hot. Well, actually, that's so false, it's not even funny, because you have a tailored impact event. And you know, at the end of the day, so there's this relationship between ball and face that will produce that downrange end result here. And we have much more freedom in the club head construction world today than ever before. So you're able to actually tailor a club head structure. That's what you're seeing. 5-10 years ago, all the OEMs today, all the brands that have the multi-part construction, 10 years ago, they would have laughed you out of their office because those were perceived as cheaper, inferior structures. But today, you just look at the top five clubs, the drivers in that category specifically, irons, anything with anybody who has any point of difference, it's because of the structure, the mechanical structure. These are now tailored instruments, and they are much more tailored to the golf ball than ever before. So they're capable of compliance and dynamics that we've never seen before, which is very unique. Then where we fit in as a shaft company is we're trying to control some of that impact parameter. And so we kind of, it's not as though we're following that cycle, we're anticipating what's going on in that cycle. And so our goal is to look at the whole club assemblies and the type of impact. So you know, we're unique in the sense we're the only company in golf, and this is fact, that engineer and produce every single shaft of discrete length. Our costs borne in R&D cycle are bigger than any brand that's 10 times the size of us. But the reality is we believe that's important because it's perfection in each category from what we can do within our house, so to speak, materials and manufacturing processes. And at the end of the day, that's very important to the whole club assembly. So we see where the industry is going. We're looking at the whole club assembly, and we're looking at the, you know, the obliqueness of the impact, if you will. So at each impact event, shaft should be different. So you've got a different type of shaft in an iron, different profile, different either layup or in our case, winding profile and pattern, because those directly influence how the club head is presented, how the club head performs through the turf versus off a tee. So we're all looking at whole club assembly. Anyone who is really trying to capture the future, look into the future, has to look at the whole club assembly today and the impact mechanics of that event today based on what's going on today. But the improvements you've seen are the product of manufacturing cycles. Just like Zuckerberg talking about the metaverse, believe it or not, that whole world, augmented reality, is getting much closer than it was when Google introduced the Google Glass. It's not a joke anymore. It's not just hypothetical. We're getting that much closer, and it's just that much more unique. Look at how much more impact your iPhone has, the capabilities, the capture rates, the resolution. Same in manufacturing, whether it's heavy industrial like golf clubs, which is still heavy industrial, you know, manufacturing, or golf shafts, a little cleaner, but still it's industrial manufacturing. So our processes have freed up. That gives us the ability to give more to the golfer, deliver more to the golfer, and much more tailorable. So last thing on that subject, I'm not going to cut you off, but I'm going to say one thing. If you look at the different face materials today, it speaks to what I'm talking about. We've actually gone back into, you know, TaylorMade using carbon fiber in their face. I'll just speak on that for a second. It's not that carbon is that much more unique in a face application. What they're really looking at is the impedance, the mechanical impedance with the golf ball. That's a very unique thing. Now, it's a different order than, say, something with much greater ductility, ductile strength, like a, you know, say, it would normally be a steel, but in the world of metal woods, we've been using titanium because of mass density and relative to mass. So specific density. So it's unique. It's very unique. Is it better? I won't comment on any of that stuff. But look at the freedom in manufacturing. We can do it today. We couldn't do it, you know, to the same level years ago. It was, let's say, for rudimentary purposes, 2 inches thick versus, you know, 60 layers, if you will. So, and from that perspective, that's very unique. And it's very, very novel. But we're also using some other materials in clubs that are very unique. And the Shaft Company, we look at that as well. So very critical.
You know, I think as much as that was a pretty wild ride with that answer, I think it actually isolates really well into a question that was asked a lot. And that is just to get a better understanding of graphite shafts and how they profile in an iron. Everyone's asking it right now. And by everyone, I'm making a heavy assumption, but I'm sure most golfers are at least a little bit curious about graphite and irons. I mean, we saw this sweeping change to metal woods. It's obviously made its way into hybrids and utility irons, and now slowly creeping into the iron space as well. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think, and I'll let you do your thing in a second, but it's always been my understanding that there's so much more freedom to isolate certain locations of a shaft and profile them specifically in graphite than there is in steel, where steel you're limited to the step pattern, or I suppose the density of a certain area, whereas in graphite it's quite different. Can you expand on that like a lot, and then maybe clue people into what they would expect in a graphite experience with kinetics?
So everyone thought that graphite and an iron was a compromise to this point. It was like, it's just okay, I'm getting old, I need to play this. Well, actually, couldn't be any further from the truth. For, you know, again, back to impact mechanics, the dynamics of the impact event. If you really want a tailored system in your hands, from your grip all the way to your club head in an iron, very oblique angled impact, then you would actually be shorting yourself if you didn't look at, ultra precise, advanced composite or graphite shaft. So, for example, we filament wind versus a lot of everyone else, bulk of all, we're the leader in filament winding. So we pride ourselves in our position that way. Why is that better in an iron than just standard layup graphite? Well, number one, it's a net part. Our parts don't go through a centerless grinder, which you've heard me speak on before. It's critical though to concentricity. And at the same time, in our winding process, we can actually tailor within millimeters bending profile all the way up the shaft. So we can actually incorporate that step pattern if we needed to, and where we need to at each intersection on millimeters, not inches when it's a flag layup shaft. We control stiffness and torque and the general bend profile, EI, on the basis of the whole beam. So because it's very much connected, the butt section to the tip, every inch of that shaft, if you will, is very critical to that downrange end result that the golfer might need. Traditionally, again, golfers have felt steel is the best, most stable. All it is it's a constraint, and it's in some ways a crutch that golfers are leaning on the basis of just simply knowing that it's familiar. And that's tough, because that's a superstition, not someone who's willing to give up control to gain control. So that's, I think one of the critical factors here. Now, you can go to graphite, but if it's just graphite, well, it's like measuring, looking at a piece of plywood versus let's just say a 2x4, if you will, and you're going to construct a house. I think from the basis of that, wouldn't you want the plywood over the 2x4 for the most part, if you could actually preordain your construction? So even probably some lesser calibered graphite, not all, some of it's just, these are crystalline materials still. So some of it is better than most steel. So, and it just depends. There are some great steel shafts out there, but they are still flawed in their manufacturing process and the purity of the material in which they're being extruded.
So let me ask you this specifically, and you can debunk aggressively if you'd like. Any truth or rumor that steel will always be significantly stiffer than graphite?
Absolutely. There's no truth to that at all. At the end of the day, I think, again, that's that it, when you have an ability to control layer by layer, what you're doing in a graphite shaft versus steel, where you're kind of at the mercy of your quench and cooling process. There's just no way even the best steel will see fatigue right off the line. And I think that your quality controls in check for carbon fiber are much greater at a premium construction level, without question of doubt. So stiffness, I mean, we have, I'll give you an example, our putter shafts, they're off the chart stiff. If you were to do that in steel, you'd have to produce a pipe, solid pipe, a dowel, dowel stock with some taper. And at the end of the day, they're just, it isn't feasible with our, in our application. These are sports equipment and apparatus where mass is really a determinant in your design theory and concept. So I think that's really, really important to know. I mean, you don't want rebar in your golf shafts. That's there are some shaft companies out there that just think more layers is better. Well, that's wrong too. And you can achieve a stiffening effect through a considerably and a more appreciably dynamic manufacturing processes like us. We use filament winding, as I mentioned. We have 3 degrees of freedom. We can actually introduce the tension of the fiber. We preload our fibers according to design and flex. So I think by and large, pound for pound, we can produce a stiffer advanced composite carbon fiber shaft than steel for the application. That's relative to the application, because you get a steel shaft manufacturer will send you a pipe, literally a dowel stock, and say, well, beat this. Well, actually we might, but at the same time, that's at relative frequency, right? Depends on what you're measuring and how you measure it. But at the same time, you know, from a dynamic perspective, these are dynamic applications and weight and some variability with the dynamics of the product are critical. So pound for pound, really, there's nothing that compares. And our products are really unique in that regard. Where when we load it up, our technologies, again, I've said this before, incomparable technical value proposition. But the reality is our iron shafts are the same technology you'd see in the, like say our ballistic driver series is the same in the ballistic irons, but it's relative to the design of an iron. That's why there's almost parity in our pricing. So that's really unique. That's pure transparent. That's open the kimono stuff where our shafts, we're putting all of our technology in every single one. It's why there isn't this vast delta between our driver shaft and hybrid fairway and hybrid and iron as some other companies. So that's unique.
So a lot of questions came about asking about the different swing profiles. We talked a little bit about it as you test on the robot, but when it comes to kinetics as a whole, can you easily identify just by discussing this what shafts would be a really good fit for someone that may be really aggressive versus a smooth swing?
Yeah. So, from our line, you're suggesting?
Yes. Just in general. 100%. Okay. 100%
yeah.
Kinetics.
Yeah. Yeah. So our ballistic series is our baseline. It fits the widest array of players. It's not as disruptive, but the profile is very similar to our velocity series, which has now set 8 world records for ball speed, independent of clubhead. And that's also very unique, but it's super disruptive. So the feedback that a player might get from the velocity series is disruptive. But if they're willing to give up a little control, the gain control, they will have demonstrable results. Ballistic series though caters to the widest array of players. It is really, really noble in the sense, you know, it's net part, it's filament wound, pardon me, tension tailored. So it's 3 degrees of freedom again. Use of Kevlar, our use of Kevlar in that series, is for its elastic strength. Everyone else is using it for damping or density, you know, a mass. So it's very dense. It has no modulus, but it's used in the most ultra important high performance applications, aerospace to defense and anything that you want to protect generally goes inside of Kevlar. You know, you're either inside a Kevlar exterior, so that part's very unique. But yeah, our two profiles, velocity and ballistic, speak to fitting the widest array of golfers to the swing characteristics defined, and then we tailor the rest of our line around the gaps, so the voids that we have, so because we recognize, you know, one size does not fit all.
So when it comes to that guy out there who's swinging 130x steel shafts, what do you tell them? Where do you tell them to start when you go to Kinetics, when you go to Club Champion and check them out? What is the thing you tell them straight away, and what should they expect? Because when you swing 130x typically in an iron, you're not getting a lot of feedback, and I think we've all become a bit accustomed to the fact that the stiffer it is, the less feedback you get. In a lot of ways, people think that's a good thing. What it sounds like you're telling me now is that there's a bit of a different thing going on here, and you should be able to feel a little bit of that shaft freedom and still gain that performance aspect that you're speaking of.
Okay, yeah. So velocity, I'll just say this, it's a driver shaft. It's only a driver shaft. We didn't see the performance through and through on that guy down in the line. So ballistic is carried right through to the irons. Less is more. So that player is our 110 gram ballistic series, probably in the 40 flex. And unique thing too, on our fitting profile, our fitting tab on our current website, we have a new one coming. It is coming, launching this year. And but that is every profile at the final fit level is determined by hundreds and hundreds of hours of each shaft testing. That's after we've gone through our player testing. This is back turning around full cycle again to fit profile testing. So from proof of concept to in the field to back here again. But the reality is that static weight difference, no golfer of that speed will notice the difference, because the 130 gram, say iron shaft that they've been using, most likely 120 to 130 gram iron shaft, actually that ovals. So that's kind of losing some energy in the impact of it. It's deforming. And whereas with our product, the you won't see that kind of ovaling. It's very stout. And this speaks through our whole line from drivers all the way through. It's very easy. We're very unique. A fast player can flex down, still game our product. Case in point, we've got guys at 150 miles an hour club speed using a senior, what someone would quote as our senior flex, a D10 in the driver. It's unheard of, but that actually gets very stiff at the moment of impact, that shaft. The harder they swing, the greater the frequency of the shaft. You know, it really increases in stiffness. But when a golfer tries to stretch into a flex, they will find with our product, they will have a difficult time. And that speaks to sort of, again, the concentricity and the dynamic of what we're doing. So these are elastically tailored composites.
That's a really interesting point to make. And I'm curious as to whether people have had bad experiences, or at least what they define as a bad experience, because they're going with the assumption of, I need the stiffest shaft in this profile. And they get the D30, D40s into their hands. And they're like, man, I just can't make the shaft work. In reality, they needed to be in D20. Is that a challenge for you guys? Are you going to find ways to explain that to golfers, that there's more than just flex in the profile that you should play?
Yeah, I hope so. I hope we perfect that and convey that better for the end user, because we don't fit into that category. Most fitters across the board, from the most ultra competent fitting retailers through and through to the premium small one-off guys, they all would fit on the basis of what you're speaking to versus what I'm speaking to on the basis of. So our products, again, they're used to fitting guys into a, a flex, whatever that might be. Mm-hmm. Yet with us, they don't realize, again, that paper spec doesn't convey to, you have to understand how it's being made, what the product consists of. And that's critical to the downrange performance, the end result. And in our case here, that's sort of the key. We have to convey that a little bit better, but it's very important for sure. We see people overflex just because of habit all the time. And then where we do hear that they have a tough time working with the product is if they're overflexed. I mean, it's that simple, yet they flex down generally in our irons. Most golfers, and that speaks to about 90%, have to weight down, flex down, or both. And you don't see that with a whole lot of other products out there. We're proud of that. And there's a lot of good products out there, but I know what we do is second to none. And at the end of the day, it's not a compromise to switch to, quote, graphite. Our ballistic series is advanced composite. It's a Kevlar iron. So in reality, it's not quite graphite and it's not steel. So it's very dynamic. And statically, you might see it on paper. The weight specs aren't what you're used to. Maybe the flex, the cycles, whatever it is you're looking for. But you got to also understand how these are being made. If we gave you what you wanted, you wouldn't be able to hit it under our construction and under our recipe. That's the bottom line. So different is different. It's just that simple.
Well, we have probably time for one more question, unless you want to take 2 hours on this episode. And maybe we just have you back soon for lots more questions that are in the queue. But one of the question asks, what about a shaft promotes a hook or a slice? And is there any truth to that where changing out a shaft can produce such a thing?
Yeah, so you can preordain a shaft inertially. Through let's for the rudiments of it, balance for a presenting the club head in a particular way such that you might get more draw or more fade bias in your downrange trajectory. And I think that would be the best way to look at it. you can tailor that from a balance point perspective, and then ultimately that affects your flex and the general EI of the beam. But you're still at the mercy of what your whole club assembly would be in this regard. But you can preordain the shaft for presenting the club head in a way that might induce greater bend, whether it be left to right or right to left.
So the idea here is, as regardless of how you swing, as you drive into the club, it's effectively releasing later to create a slice or earlier to create a draw. Is that the design concept that you're speaking of?
Yeah. You can, again, these are trigger points on the basis of that. Yeah.
Wow. Well, I don't know, Jason, we've got so many questions. I've loved your answers so far. If you don't mind, come back on, in the next couple months and let's answer some more questions. Maybe if we get some additional feedback, if you're interested in doing that for us.
Always my pleasure. I hope I don't turn your beard gray by boring you to death, but
I'll shave it if it does, it's fine.
It'd be a pleasure. And thanks to all those who are interested in listening. And we really do appreciate, the THP community. We love them. And, if they ever have a question, they can always direct it to us as well. We respond to everything ongoing. So,
Well, there's all one good part at the end of the show I always love to do, Jason. It's give you an opportunity to ask me any questions since I've had the thrill of grilling you for 40 minutes. You have anything for me today?
Well, I guess what's in your bag right now, even though you're kind of, in between seasons, if you will. I mean, can you disclose anything that you've got going on? It doesn't have to be my product. It could be anybody's.
What are we talking about here? Are we talking about shafts or heads?
What's your favorite club in the bag right now? And what is it? What does it consist of?
Well, here's what I can tell you. I've moved away from my forever putter That's been retired. Got some new really cool irons from Mizuno here that I'm excited to experience a little bit. Driver, I'm checking out Srixon's the ZX5 that I'm excited to experience. And you know, from there, we've kind of got some open-ended opportunity. We've got the Epic Super Hybrid in what I thought was going to be the year without a fairway wood. So I'm at the best part of the year, Jason, where everything's going to work and I've not proved anything wrong yet. So,
yeah,
you know, that's, we'll see what it's like. I figure the next time you'll be on, it'll look totally different. So
actually that Epic Super Hybrid, I will say this. The guys over at Callaway are great partners and great, company with us and the really great engineering that is hot. And with our ballistic hybrid shaft, we just did a session. It's not conclusive yet, but I'm seeing things that are outrageous. It's a great combination. Looks great. And so, then from that perspective, that's also the grail for you right now. Are you not going to put that in the bag? And then you dump what, a five wood?
No, it's the goal was a year without fairway woods. I had some problems last year. I don't want to talk about them, but I was going to go straight from there to my driver and on the other side, go to a driving iron, utility iron, and just add a bunch of iron style heads in the bag, even though I don't play anything above a 58 degree. I just wanted that diversity throughout the middle of the bag because I thought it was super interesting. So I've actually got a split set of the 221s and 225s along with a couple of the new high flies from Mizuno. So I'm excited to see how they actually pair up. And I have a feeling the three iron or whatever you want to call it, the utility iron might give the Epic Hybrid Super Hybrid a run for its money. So we'll see. Doors wide open, but it sounds like I'm being told the ballistic shaft is the play there. It's the one they'll do all the difference.
It just might be. And I know a guy, so you never know. But the fact is, one thing I do like is the return of the driving irons in turf grass. There's a misnomer about the hybrid being so forgiving. And when you get in these thick grass conditions, like you've got juicy, wet grass, the iron just is so much more beneficial to all players, not just the proficient and an elite player like yourself. But the reality is it works well for everybody because hybrids are good on the short grass, but chances are that golfer isn't seeing the short grass a whole lot. So the impact mechanics there, really neat. The hybrids want to bottom out under the ball, whereas the iron, at least if you're going to do that, you've got that ability to make some contact, a little more meat on the bone.
You're talking a lot more about my driver game from 2021 than you realize, but I'll let it slide. Again, Jason, thank you so much. I always have a blast talking to you, and I look forward to the next one.
Okay, thanks to you, Dan. Appreciate it.
Thanks. Hey, everyone, if you're golfing this weekend, have a great time. If you're not playing graphite iron shafts, listen up, give it a try, see what you think.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.